The following Bible study is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
As you remember, last time went through Jesus Christ being at the Feast of Tabernacles, and we learned a number of things there. We saw that the last great day was a high day or a holy day, and so we think we have ended, you know, they also went home to their homes and not to a tabernacle that they had built. Anyway, we learned a number of things about the last great day being the actual high day, and there's an argument about this within the churches of God, and I think that those two pieces of evidence are a good witness that it was the high day that was being talked about. And while he was at the feast, of course, what happens to Jesus in almost every case is the religious leaders corner him, and they try to oppose him. They try to catch him in something, and that happened one more time. In this case, it was a woman taken in adultery. And in this case, as they're opposing him, he tells them that they are deceived. The religious leaders are deceived. They say, well, we're Abraham's children, and we're not deceived. But then Jesus says this, if we begin in verse 37, and Jesus said unto him, verse 37, I know that you're Abraham's seed, but you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. And this is a vital, important lesson, that these people wanted to kill him because there was no place for him in them. So Jesus agrees that they're Abraham's seed, but they still had human nature. And that means that in their heart, they are hostile to God. And that's, you know, found in Romans 8, of course, 7 through 9, that without the Spirit of God, the human mind is hostile towards the law of God, and it cannot be in conformity to it. And so, as a result, they wanted to kill him. As you remember earlier, the Pharisees actually said, why haven't you taken him? In other words, they already had conspired and had a plan, in effect, to take him, and he knew it. They had plans to kill him. At this time, you and I have been privileged to have the Holy Spirit. And we can understand many of the things of God as a result of it, but they could not understand. But my point tonight is, you and I still have the very same human nature that they had, even though we have the Spirit. So Christ lives in us through the Spirit of God. And my question is, do we ever attempt to kill him? Now, all of us would think, well, that's ludicrous. Of course we wouldn't do that. But you understand, what do we do if we knowingly sin? If we knowingly go against what Christ has told us, are we any different from the Pharisees who heard his word and rejected it? In other words, what do we have to do to the Spirit in order to keep sinning? We have to turn it off. You understand my point? I'm making an illusion. We have to kill the Spirit of Christ in us, or quench it, as it says, in order to be able to bypass it and continue doing what we want to do in our human nature, in our own human will. And so I say, what we do sometimes, spiritually, is no different from what those Pharisees did to Christ in their time. When we want to do something that we know isn't right, we become like those Pharisees. We need to turn off the Spirit. Christ's voice in us has to be shut off. And that's what they were. They were in that position. They had to shut off Christ's voice. And since they spoke of their ancestry, Jesus Christ considers this subject in verse 38. In verse 38, he says, I speak that which I have seen with my Father, and you do that which you have seen with your father. Man, this is an amazing statement. Jesus Christ had always been with the Father through eternity past. He knew him more intimately than any being could ever know him. And he had always lived that way, and he had seen personally the character, the integrity, the holiness of Almighty God. He saw the results of righteousness, and he saw the results of sin. You know, you and I, mankind in general, have only seen one side of life, the side of human nature and man's will down through history until we came to the point where Christ came and gave us his word. And we've had our own human fathers down through history. And for all generations, all the world has ever known is the human way. That's the way you grew up with. That's the way you and I learn to navigate in that world. And it is their world. And that's what we were taught from childhood. So we never really were known or have known the way of God until we were called. Then over a lifetime, we come to understand Jesus Christ's point and his way, and we see it more clearly as time goes on. We no longer reject it. We become more and more willing and desirous to imitate it. You know, but as Romans 8 says, you know, without that spirit, we would be just as hostile towards what Christ said, just as not understanding. But that's what these men were. They were hostile to God, and they are simply hostile to his way. They prefer the way of pride, the way of power, the way of human nature to the way of God. And they would kill him because that's all they knew, which was man's way. And that has been man's way, hasn't it? From the beginning of time, there was murder. And there has been, since that time, a path of murder down through history in war after war after war. And so when somebody gets in your way and you can't get what you want, what do? They remove them. Just like they removed, you know, Kennedy, just like they remove other people, Hoffa, you know, they just get rid of them if they're in their way. And that's what they did to him. So the Jews had answered Christ, and they tried to put him in his place. And the reason was, he wasn't like they were. Remember it said in another place that he never gave himself to man? Because he knew what was in man. So he never sided with them. He never became a part of them, you know, because once you do that, they expect you to follow their, you know, general guidelines or a way of thinking or philosophy or whatever. And then when you don't, they'll turn on you. And I've seen this happen in my own life where I remember I made an enemy. All I did was tell somebody, no, I'm not going to be able to do what you're asking me to do. From that time on, I was hunted down like a criminal practically by this person, and they were trying to get me out of the ministry if they could. So their thought was, you know, he's acting high and mighty, like he's better than us. In verse 39, they answered, and they said unto him, Abraham is our father. And Jesus said unto them, if you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. So here they claim that Abraham is their father, and they believe that being a part of Abraham's lineage was a primary thing, and that it counted, and they took a lot. I mean, it counted a lot with God, and they took an enormous amount of pride in this fact. But even today, you'll hear the Jewish people say this, we're God's chosen people. And there is a certain amount of pride and superiority that they carry with them. They're a little snobbish sometimes, thinking we're the chosen ones. We're better than others. Understand? But honestly, I bring this up because I don't see us as being much different today. You know, even those people that have been given the Spirit of God and have the enormous gift of His calling, even today, thousands today believe that they are right because they're in the right place, the right church. What's the difference? Abraham's genealogy or this church genealogy? You understand? This church computer list. You're with the right group. That's the issue, you see. And that is not God's issue. It doesn't matter, you know. They believe they're right and good because of this, but that's what primarily matters to them. But what primarily matters to God? Our thoughts matter to God, and the actions that result from those thoughts. No matter where you are, no matter what your condition or situation, that's what matters to Him. Rich, poor, important, not important to others, it doesn't matter to God. So, anyway, it has, I believe, absolutely no meaning to God what race we are. And He doesn't care what lineage we have, but how we think and act. And so, for this reason, Jesus says, if you were His children, the children of Abraham, really, you would act like Abraham did. Now, remember the verse, Genesis 26:5, where it says this, Abraham kept my laws, my commandments, my statutes, and my ordinances. So he kept the commandments. He obeyed God. And he kept the statutes. And that word is actually one of the words used when it refers to the holy days. And then it says he kept my laws. And when you look that word up, the word is actually Torah. Well, the Torah is the word used today for the first five books of the Bible. So don't for a minute think that the holy days came at Sinai. They were always in existence, and the knowledge of what we have today in the first five books of the Bible existed then. And those people knew God's laws, and they knew His statutes and His judgments and His ordinances and a whole list of things. Plus, if He said something like, I want you to go from here to there, you know, He just did it. I need you to sacrifice your son now. Well, he didn't want to, but he did it. But that's the way Abraham's children should be. Abraham was like that. If God said it, he did it. He didn't question it. He didn't argue, you know. It was a time when he had Lot's best welfare in mind when he approached God and said, would you, you know, save it for 10, 20, or whatever, you know, the city. But he was thinking of Lot. But he was still acting in terms of saving life. And so it's still the way God thinks. That's the way He is. And if God says it, He would do it. And that's what we must learn to do today, to keep God's word without questioning. And then we will be the children of Abraham. And, you know, God is a family, and we've understood this for a long time, but you don't understand, God isn't, have you seen the families today? There's divorces, or if they stay together, there's arguing, there's fighting, drunken brawls take place. I mean, I've been up here in Montana, which is so much nicer than California, and we hear so few police car alarms, but I've seen them come to these houses up here. You know, domestic abuse. I've seen that happen a number of times where the police are called out to a home, you know. But my point is, you and I are being groomed for a marriage and for living in a family. Well, we've got to learn to live in that family in a way that loves one another and cooperates with one another and doesn't just blow out or try to hurt the other one if they feel threatened or, you know, you said something I didn't like, you know, and so I'm going to try to get you. Because that's what these guys were doing. Jesus said something they didn't like. They're going to get him because he was a threat to them. But this is what we need to practice being. Use every day as a practice day to grow in the wisdom of the knowledge of God the Father. Because Christ knew him. And that's what made the difference. And he said, you don't understand because you don't know the Father. But that's my Father. Genesis 15 and verse 3. We are to be children of Abraham, seed of Abraham. And there's an interesting comment here that God makes to Abraham I want to pick up and magnify just a little bit. 15:3-5, Abraham said, behold, to me you've given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is my heir. So there was something that he desperately wanted. and God would not withhold it from him. And so he said, but we have to learn to be patient, of course. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this shall not be your heir, but he that shall come forth out of your very own bowels shall be your heir. And he brought him forth abroad, actually moved him. He took Abraham someplace, and he said, look now towards heaven, and tell the stars if you be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall your seed be. And so those who are going to be the children spiritually of Abraham, the father of the faithful, those who are going to remain faithful and keep God's commandments and statutes and judgments down through the corridor of time and through history, those individuals are going to do what? Shine like the stars. There's going to be a multitude so vast, just like looking up into the starry sky. That's what it'll be when you see the children of God coming, because we will each stand before Christ's judgment seat. We will each be given glory according to our works on this earth at this time, during this lifetime. But then we will be like those stars. So back to John. I think it's interesting that he pointed to the stars. I don't think he just meant number. I think the glory was also included. So we will shine with enormous glory. We'll have energy and power greater than the sun's. And Christ now makes a comparison in John 8, this time in the next verse, in verse 40. But he says, now you seek to kill me. A man that's told you the truth, which I have heard of God, this did not Abraham. So these Jewish leaders were after Christ and wanted to kill him. There was one single reason. It wasn't the way he looked. You know, it wasn't the way he acted. That didn't cause the problem. It was what he said. Because when he spoke, as they tried to corner him, he exposed them, didn't he? To ridicule. Because he showed their duplicity every time. Every time they tried to bring, like the woman caught in adultery, or, you know, should we pay taxes? You know, whose wife is she going to be? Every time he confounded them right in front of the common people. So he exposed the hypocrisy of these men. You know, when I was a little boy and we had Halloween, you know, we would dress up as skeletons and ghosts and goblins and stuff like that. But in more recent history, they have more elaborate costumes. They found another market. They have more elaborate costumes. You know what some of the costumes were this year? President Obama masks. They had Sarah Palin masks. They had Transformer masks, Superman masks, Spider-Man masks. You know, whatever the kids admired, that's who they wanted to reflect, wasn't it? And so these people admired Abraham, and they wore a mask. They weren't real. They weren't really that person. But they acted, and they tried to appear as though they were the children of Abraham, and they wanted to imitate him. But they weren't imitating him at all. They pretended to be like Abraham. They pretended to know the meaning of the scriptures. You know, the truth was that Jesus was a terrible embarrassment to these men who acted as if they were somebody. He exposed the fact that they erred not knowing the scriptures. He exposed the fact that they put the traditions of men before the commandments of God. He exposed the fact that their motives were not true. And he did it in front of the people, and the common people could easily see the fallacy. And these leaders felt they had no other choice. They had to get rid of him. They had to get rid of him. Just like we sometimes have to get rid of God's Spirit if we're going to do something wrong. They had to get rid of him. And so they had tried repeatedly to catch him in some error. And each time he revealed their foolishness. So they had a choice. You can join him or you could kill him. But if they joined him, it would mean what? The loss of their reputation, the loss of their position, and the loss of their income. And so they felt, we have no other choice. We've got to get rid of this man. For this reason, Jesus said this. in verse 41, you do the deeds of your father. And said they to him, well, we're not born of fornication. We have one father, even God. So have you ever had a bunch of vegetables in the refrigerator all kind of laying together and you kind of let them go for a long time and one of them gets a little fuzzy and mushy and then pretty soon it turns the other one's fuzzy and mushy? They had one father and it was the devil. And the devil is a bad dad. He's gone bad. And when he gets with people, he influences them and he corrupts them, just like vegetables do when they rot. And people of this world don't realize who their father is. But Satan was a murderer, a rotten dad who was a murderer from the beginning. And he corrupted the angels first, then he corrupted mankind with Adam and Eve, and he continues to do so throughout the world today. And that's why I say the people of the world don't realize who their father really is. They went in the direction of following Satan, the devil. And they're a little different than these religious leaders. They believe they're worshiping God, but they're not. So Jesus exposed them. And what did they do? They retaliated, didn't they? They tried to cut him down. Ever notice when you bring up a point of truth, people will do this? They'll attack your ethnicity. They will attack your church that you're associated with. They'll attack your reputation. They will attack whenever they hear something that they don't like. And I want to make a point here. I want to relate something that I've argued with a number of people. There's a number of people, and there's some even in the Church of God, who believe the Protestant or Catholic community are worshiping God because they have the Bible. But I want you to put it in this perspective that we're reading tonight. This to me is evidence, because I say they're not worshiping God. You know, did the Pharisees and Sadducees have the Bible? Yes. Did they sing songs to God and praise? Yes. Did they act like they were religious? Yes. But who was their father? The devil. So today we have a whole religious community, a vast religious community. They have Bibles, they go to church, they sing songs, and they act religious. Who's their father? Is it God? You tell them a truth of God, and what do? Argue. They argue it. They don't accept his law. They won't accept his days. They won't accept anything of his ways. So I want us to understand what we're dealing with and why we're not like everybody else in this world. Because our Father is God, like Jesus. And their father is the devil. And I'm convinced that the Protestant community is not worshiping God. I know they think they are, and they do it with lots of music and lots of ornate buildings and all kinds of stuff. But they did the same thing to Baal. So when Jesus said this to them, of course, they came back to try to cut him down and mock him. And they said, well, we aren't born of fornication, you know. And they, were, of course, were referring to Joseph not being his real father. But it's interesting to me, isn't it, how rumors will spread. Here it is 30 years later, and they're still accusing him of not having a father. You know, spreading lies about him 30 years later. Then they say God is their father. Of course he was, but it's the God of this world. In John 8, verse 42, Jesus said unto them, if God were your father, you would have loved me, because I proceeded forth and came from God, neither I came of myself, but he sent me. So they didn't recognize the truth Jesus spoke. And it was because they didn't have God as their father. Jesus came directly from the Father, and he wasn't doing his own thing. He wasn't speaking his own words. He wasn't doing his own will. And he was, as he said, the scriptures say anyway, he was the express image of the Father. He said, I can do nothing of my own self, but it's the Father that does the works. You know, he said, I only do what I saw the Father do. And he said this, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So he came to show us, who would have the Spirit, what God was really like. And he's like Jesus Christ was. So do we have God as our Father? Or are we just a bunch of religious people squabbling over doctrine like they were? Because if we have God as our Father, we will have a love for Christ. And as he says, if you love me, what? Keep my commandments. Keep my commandments. The problem was they could not relate to Jesus. Verse 43. Why do you not understand my speech, he says, even because you can't hear my word? You're of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father will you do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and he abode not in the truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. So, without the Spirit, you have to admit it is hard to understand what Jesus says. I mean, I don't look down on the people that don't understand, because the one I look down on is me, because I do understand, and I wonder why I don't do better than I do sometimes. But I remember before I was baptized, you know, I was, before I had the Spirit, you know, I misread things all the time. And I remember I talked to people about, I knew I was being called. I knew there was something I was supposed to do and someplace I was supposed to be, but I didn't know where it was or what it was. But I could feel it inside me, and I knew it was in the Bible. And so I'd go there and search, but I would misquote scriptures I really didn't understand. And then after I was baptized, and as I studied and as years went by, I began to understand more and more. And then as I made mistakes, I understood more and more. And then as I had successes, I understood more and more. And it's a process over time, isn't it? Us learning more and more to think the way he thinks and to live the way he lives. So I think our understanding deepens a little bit with each Sabbath and with every feast we attend. So Christ makes an allusion to them having Satan as their father. And again, I say it's because he was a murderer from the beginning. And he used that subtlety of his to lead the angels and to lead mankind into deceit, so that they would ultimately die, so that it would result in their deaths. And these men that we're reading about were allowing themselves to be led by that very same Spirit. They were seeking a way, if you can imagine this, seeking a way to kill Christ. You know, imagine if you were Jesus and these men kept, every time you went somewhere, there'd be a crowd that would gather around you and they'd be asking questions, you'd be talking, and then the religious leaders would come up and they'd try to catch you. And he knew they were going to try to kill him. Imagine if you knew these guys you're talking to are going to try to kill you. Man, Christ was really, I think, courageous in the way he handled things. In verse 45, and because I tell you the truth, you believe me not. So they didn't believe the truth. You know what they're like to me? The modern politicians. Do they care about the truth? No. What do they care about? Their position, their status, their money, you know, their comfort. Are they really looking out for us? No. Well, that's what these people were faced with, and that's why the common people liked Christ so much, because they saw the corruption of their political leaders. That's what they were like. They did not care about the truth. You know, today, I don't think our government's even listening to the American public. They're trying to control others and seeking a position and prestige and so on. But if our modern leaders saw Jesus Christ and spoke to him, he would be a threat to them, wouldn't he? He would. He'd be a threat. And they'd have to do what? Get rid of him. They'd have to do something to get rid of him. He was in their way, and he'd have to be eliminated. So I ask again, what about you and what about me? Do we find that sometimes we have our own agenda and it's not his? Do we sometimes, you know, like a potentiometer, kind of turn down the effect of the Spirit, kind of quiet his Spirit in us so that we can do our will? And you know why I say this? The entire church at the end of the age does exactly this. They don't see his truth. They're poor, they're blind, and they're naked, which means that they're not clothed with linen. They're not righteous, is what that means. You know, the reason is that we want to do what we want and not what he wants. Everybody has that in them because we have human nature. But the point is, our whole game, if you'll let me say that respectfully, is to submit our will to his. That's what we're struggling and striving to do. And Christ continues this thought as he says, goes on in verse 46. Which of you convinces me of sin? And if I say the truth, why do you not believe me? He that is of God hears God's words. You therefore hear them not, because you're not of God. They couldn't convict Christ of any sin, and yet, you know, all of us sin. What if we came across someone who actually never sinned? You know, they actually never sinned. Wouldn't we tend to want to follow them? Well, yes, of course we would, but not these guys, because he was a threat to them. That's why. You know, there's no reason to distrust Jesus Christ. And they should have believed him, but they didn't want to believe him because they didn't want to obey God. Instead, they wanted to do what so many religious leaders want to do today. Oh, God is wonderful, but they want to use God for their own purposes. They want to use him to aggrandize themselves. They want to use him to hold on to their positions as religious leaders and power. They want to use him to fulfill their recognition needs. They want to use him to fulfill human nature's desire to appear righteous before other people. That's what they wanted to use God for. And that's why they made up their own religion. It wasn't God's religion that they were doing. Judaism is not and never was God's religion. It is the religion made up by the Jewish people for their own purposes and to serve their own purposes. Again, when you have no real argument, if you're talking to somebody and they challenge you and you have no real argument, what is your last resort? Attack, right? That's what they're going to do. Verse 48, then answered the Jews and said unto him, say we not well that you're a Samaritan and that you have a devil? So this wasn't the first time they said that. They were saying it already, weren't they? Don't we say correctly that you have a devil and you're a Samaritan? This is so revealing. Here they were spreading this rumor over Judea, telling people that he was a possessed Samaritan. Can you imagine that? Telling people that. You remember who the Samaritans were. They were the people that when Assyria conquered Israel, they rebelled. And so the Assyrians took Israel out of their land and placed them up into Assyria and other places. And then they would take other people and replace the Israelites. That way, if the people weren't in their land, then they wouldn't have anything to fight for. And that was their thinking. So that's why they used that strategy. But what they did is they put Persians and Babylonians down into the area that Israel once held. And when that happened, these people that were down there, God was just so frustrated by the whole thing. He sent plagues of lions and everything on those people. And so they cried out to the Assyrians and they said, you got to send us a priest, because they believed at that time that every land had its own god. Babylon had its god. Assyria had its god. Persia had its god. And Israel had its god. See? So they sent for a priest to teach us how to worship the God of this land so we'll stop getting plagued. So they sent them a priest. Okay, now the Samaritans had a priest. They had the five books of the law. That's why they still have only five books of the law. Okay, then what happened was, once the people came back out of captivity from Babylon, remember Sanballat was the enemy and he was there, but the high priest's son married Sanballat's daughter. And so what happened was, then when Ezra said we have to get rid of our foreign wives, the high priest's son went up to Sanballat, and Sanballat built him a temple in Mount Gerizim, and then they had this conflict. So you can see they posed to be religious Jews. But you understand what they did? They did what has happened today in the Church of God. You can't even hardly find what's true because there's counterfeits. And so the Samaritans were like a counterfeit religion up north, and the Jews hated them for it. And so there couldn't be any worse thing to be. And yet they're telling everybody he's really a Samaritan. And not only that, the guy is a devil. He's possessed of the devil. Can you imagine how this affected people? That's what they were doing. You know, these lovely religious people. You know. But you see this happening even today. So they charge him with being a heretic. And they charge him with being divisive to the religion that they purported to support. So have you ever seen this tactic today? Again, is my point, you know. If a person speaks the truth and others don't want to hear it, what do? They discredit you some way or another. And I've had people just tell all kinds of lies. I remember what was my best friend and a guy I took in and lived with. Had him live with me, and I helped him a number of years ago, many years ago, really. But I remember I said, you know, I asked him why he never contacted me, and he said, well, one of the ministers had gone up there and told him that I had become a jackbooted Nazi. And, that's like exactly not me, you know. It's so funny. And but my point is that's what people will do. They will attack you if they feel in any way threatened by you. And so if you're preaching the truth, you're going to be attacked. And you're definitely not going to be liked. So they're calling him names. And then he responds to them respectfully, actually, and in verse 49 and verse 50. Jesus doesn't act like they did. He doesn't answer in kind, but he answers, I have not a devil, but I honor my Father, but you do dishonor me. And so he says this very clearly, though, so nobody's mistaken, because you understand you speak to a fool according to his foolishness. In other words, if he didn't say, I don't have a devil, then people would say, see, he even admitted it, you know. So he tells them specifically, I don't have a devil, but you do dishonor me. You know, so he's telling them again the truth. And the reason that they can't understand is simply because they don't know the Father. And this reminds me of a couple of other occasions in the Bible. You know, remember when Christ was first raised and from the dead, and he was surrounded by people that knew him for years, and they didn't even recognize him. Why do you think that is? Why would they not recognize him? Well, some might think it's because he would have been beaten up or something. But I'm going to suggest to you the reason was, I mean, he's even going along on the road to Damascus talking to people. They still don't recognize him, you know. And they didn't recognize him when he was doing the fish, when he was frying the fish for them. But the reason is because they're not expecting him to be there. That's why. Because you ever notice that? We tend to see what we expect to see. And that's the way it is. And they weren't seeing what they expected the Messiah to look like. And that's why they were upset with the whole thing, because it didn't fit what their image of a Messiah was. Then there was a time when the apostles spoke in tongues, and the people heard it. But what did they think? Well, this can't be possible, so they must be drunk. You know, so you understand my point is that we misjudge so easily because of our own personal perceptions, and that's what these people were doing. But when we honestly and sincerely seek to honor God and to know Him, we do come to understand these things. Like it says in 1 Corinthians 2 and 9 through 13, you know, it says clearly that eye hasn't seen, ear hasn't heard, you know, it hasn't even entered the mind of man what God has prepared for them that love Him. But it says right after that, but He has revealed it to us. In other words, it's very hard to understand without the Spirit of God. But with the Spirit of God, it is possible to understand. And the more we obey God, the more we have His Spirit. And the more we're connected to the Father, and the more we're honoring Him, and the more we know Him. So today, Christ, I think, is giving us a lesson of how you can tell when a person is speaking the truth. And I want to mention that, of course, there's more than one indicator. This is just one instance. It's not the only single instance. But, you know, I mean, first of all, you can tell if a person is speaking the truth if it complies and fits with the scriptures and is not in conflict with it, you know. But secondarily, who are you trying to glorify? That's what Jesus is saying, isn't he? You know, if you want to believe somebody, look at who they're trying to glorify. So who are the religious leaders on television trying to glorify? Themselves, aren't they? As they do these healings to drum rolls and everything, you know, as they put makeup all over their faces and have their hair combed so stylish and wear $600,000 suits and stuff like that. So what about today in the Church of God? What's happened to us? Who are we trying to glorify? Are we telling people that we're the best part of the work, we're the spearhead, we're the better part of it, we're the only ones really doing the work? Are we the ones saying, I'm the only prophet, or I've written more books than anybody else? Or, you know, are we talking about ourselves? Are we trying to glorify ourselves? Or are we really trying to glorify God? Are we really pointing people to look at what He's like? Look how He lives. Look how He does things. Or are we saying, look at how we do things, and look at how great we are. You should be a part of us. See, you can always tell. That's a sign, Jesus says, of whether or not a person is telling the truth. So Jesus now stops arguing on this line, changes the subject a little bit in 51. Let's go there, where he says, truly, truly, I say unto you, if a man keeps my saying, he shall never see death. Of course, again, he's speaking of which death? The second death. You know, but these religious leaders don't really know the scriptures. And I've run into this in all honesty. I mean, I've asked ministers questions, and they don't know the answers, and they'll give you some crazy, whacked out something. They'll say something, but it doesn't really answer the question. And I've seen that myself. They don't realize what he's speaking about. Then said the Jews unto him in verse 52, now we know that you have a devil. Abraham's dead, and the prophets. And you say, if a man keeps my saying, he shall never taste of death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, which is dead, and the prophets are dead? Who do you make yourself to be? Is what he's saying there. And what Jesus Christ says here is, I believe, of extreme importance. He does not defend himself. He does not try to validate himself to these people. Of course he was greater than Abraham. Well, why didn't he just say, I'm way better than Abraham, I'll work a miracle here and I'll just show you? You understand? He never even took it personally. Never thought that way. And he says this, and I think this is just such a powerful statement and should guide us in enormous ways. In verse 54, Jesus said, if I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father that honors me, of whom you say, He is your God. So we can always attempt to validate ourselves to other people, and we can do this, but when we do, we're always, when we're attacked or when we're held up, you know, for judgment, we try to defend ourselves. We try to rationalize. We try to justify it. It's because we trigger that defense mechanism that's part of our human nature. And every time we do that, what we say and what we do will almost always be the wrong thing. That's why Jesus said, I'm not really trying to honor myself. I don't have to even defend myself because I'm under the Father's yoke. I'm connected with Him. He's going to protect me, and we'll see that He actually does protect Christ in this situation a little bit later. But He says, the Father is the one that's going to honor me. Now, isn't that the way we should live? I mean, do you see the value and the importance of this? Of actually living for the Father and trusting Him to honor us, trusting Him to give us what our needs are and saying, you know, it's enough, it's fine, thank you, God. Whatever He gives us, because He's doing it for a reason that's for our ultimate good. So we may have a lot and it might be a test in one way, or we might have a little and it might be a test in another way. But whatever He's giving us, it's for a specific purpose if we are under God the Father and we want Him to honor us. We don't have to prove anything to anybody, do we? Not really. You don't have to prove anything to anybody. We don't have to answer anybody's questions. We don't have to do anything to validate ourselves to other human beings. And this is where I think a lot of people foul up. And so I say that what Christ says here is of enormous importance, and we should not just quickly go over it or bypass it, that He let the Father honor Him. He wasn't seeking to honor Himself. And so our response to every situation in life should really be, what's the Father's will here? What is His desire? And let Him honor us, and not us honoring ourselves, which becomes simply vanity. These guys would defend themselves, you know. They would try to do just about anything to look appropriate and prestigious in the eyes of other people. You know, they just weren't on, they weren't even anywhere near the same page Jesus Christ was on. And for this reason, Jesus says this in verse 55, yet you have not known Him, but I do know Him. And if I should say I know Him not, I should be a liar like unto you. But I know Him, and I keep His sayings. So He's saying, if I said I didn't know God, I'd be like you guys. In other words, He's calling them liars right to their face, the ones that want to kill them. He's saying, I'd be a liar just like you. And it may sound like this is maybe strong language or that Jesus is name calling. But I want to remind us, this certainly isn't anything of the sort. This is simply the truth. They were liars. That's what they were. They were sending out rumors that were lies about Him being a Samaritan, lies about Him being possessed by the devil, you know, lie after lie after lie. And He just called a spade a spade. He just said, this is what it is. You guys are liars. So He wasn't trying to put them down or anything like that. He was just telling the truth. And so, if these men were listening, they would eventually have come to see what He said. They had a chance to see their own lies, and they had a chance to repent, you know. To me, all human beings have a tendency to defend ourselves and to rationalize things and justify our behaviors, even when we're wrong. We all have this tendency inside us. This is why I strongly recommend this point, that if someone is somehow telling us that we've done something wrong, even if they're using strong derogatory terms towards us, always keep an ear cocked, because there may be some truth there, because God speaks to us in many ways, you know. And I have had people who I, you know, I thought were kind of, well, you know, can I say this? Almost a little bit retarded. I remember there was a kid I was helping in Spokesman's Club years ago, and he was a little retarded. And he turned to me one day, and he said something to me, and I went, You know, I mean, I just stepped back. I mean, I realized this guy was being used by God to correct me. What would he say those things for? He's not even smart enough to know, you know, to think about those things. And yet he nailed me, and just in a friendly way, just didn't bypass talking. And I went, wow, God is listening, watching me, and he doesn't like this. Got to change this. You know, but I was corrected by him. So my point is always keep that ear cocked, no matter who it is, even if it's your enemy and they hate your guts. You know, keep an ear cocked in case there's any truth in what they're saying. So now Jesus Christ is going to push their buttons all the way. He's going to show them something by this. But he's going to push their buttons and get them to act. Remember what he said. Satan is your father, and he was a murderer from the beginning. They didn't believe that, did they? But what are they going to do? Try to murder him right now. John 8 and verse 56. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it, and he was glad. Then said the Jews unto him, you're not yet 50 years old, and you've seen Abraham? You know, so Jesus Christ actually now starts to tell them who he was. Jesus said unto them, truly, truly, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. Now, he could have just said that in a number of different ways, but he used the term, I am. And he used that term because that's the term when Moses was in the burning bush and he said, who do I tell the Israelites has sent me? And he says, tell them I am has sent you. Now, I want to make a point here. Let's think about sacred names for a minute. Okay? God didn't say, tell them Yahoo or Yahweh or Yahweh, or he didn't use one of those terms, has sent you. He said, I am. So he's going to tell them, I am, sent me. All right? So again, it blows a hole in their arguments that there are numerous names we can use for God. And when he uses this term, I am, he infuriates them because they knew what he was saying before Abraham was, I am. You're the God that talked to Moses? You're I am? You're the ever-existing one? You're the eternal? They couldn't hear this. This was just outrageous, you know. The second thing I want to talk about is this. Can you see why we need to have a single language for the world? Because how many times do you think we say, I am? You know, are you? You know, yes, I am. You know, I am going to do this, I'm going to do that. Don't you see how Satan has corrupted virtually everything in life so that we just misuse God's name all the time, the I am? Aspect of it in our language daily, just all over there, thousands of times in every city. I mean, it's just amazing, isn't it? So you can see why we need a world language that will, you know, correct all of these, you know, distortions of the truth. You know, are you Art? I am. Oh, I'm not I am. That's for sure. You know? And then third, there's only one conclusion that I can make from this. He knew in advance what they were going to do. He knew in advance they were going to do this to him. And so in verse 59 it says this, then they took up stones to cast at him, and Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. In other words, I'm not seeking honor from you, I'm seeking honor from God. So he just slipped through. And God protected him, didn't he? So God will protect us until that such time that it's in our best interest. You know, you're finished now. This is good enough for you. I'll take you now. And so my point again is that Christ pushed their buttons. It's like this. Look, he says to them, you know, you are of your father, Satan, the devil. And he was a murderer from the beginning. Oh, no, we're not. Our father's God. Well, let's just see. Are you a murderer too? And so he just says something, and then, yes, we are murderers too, and we're going to take stones and kill you right now. Okay. He makes his point in spades, doesn't he? I mean, it's amazing that he does this at the end, you know. So anyway, let's go to Proverbs 8. I want to conclude with that there about seeking God's wisdom. You know, where is it? You know, these men could have listened. You know, he said to them, "You're liars," and they could have said, "Oh, you're right. We have been liars." You know, they said, "You're murderers," and they could have said, "Well, we don't want to do anything like that." And so they would never pick up a stone to murder somebody else, would they? You know, they could have repented. They could have taken these statements of Jesus and learned from them. They could have been wisdom. And the reason I say this is that this, our human nature will tend to protect us in our position and our status, and it will even do so to hurt others. And so we've got to recognize this tendency in us, because it's the same human nature these people had. Our church, our people, our beliefs, everything about us is right. Everything about other people has got to be wrong, okay? So my point is that God is speaking to us in the scriptures, but he's also speaking to us every day that we get up and in every action and every decision we make. God is speaking to us. And so in Proverbs 8, verse 1, it says, "Doesn't wisdom cry and understanding put forth her voice? Yes. She stands in the top of the high places and by the way in the places of the paths." She's right over here at Walmart. Go in there and look at the people. Go in and see what they care about. You can see it on their face. You can see the faces of the people that have been doing this drudgery for ages and are tired of it and don't like their job. You can just go and look. You can get so much wisdom everywhere you go. You can watch a movie and there's always a lesson you can learn from it, isn't there? There's so much wisdom everywhere you look. There's the truth of God. And we need to be focused and alert and clear and able to see it. She cries at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in at the doors. And so there you go on the freeway, and you see this guy pull out in his great big pickup truck with big wheels on it and everything speeding. And what does that teach you? How foolishness the youth is. And it's all about me. And hey, look at me. And you go, I don't want to be like that, you know. I want to be more subdued and more refined and more formal and so on. But, I mean, my point is just saying that it's everywhere you look. "Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man." Wisdom is virtually everywhere, and wisdom is unto the sons of man. In verse 5, "O you simple, understand wisdom. And you fools, the people that make mistakes a lot, be of an understanding heart. Hear, and I'll speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things." And we have this over and over in the Bible. And then we have all the conditions and situations of life that are there to teach us. And we are, these men here would not learn. They refuse to learn the lessons. And I say, let's not be like these men. We have the same human nature that they have, but don't depend on ourselves, you know, and defend ourselves from any kind of correction. Don't defend ourselves from any promptings or urges or you know, pricks of our conscience. Don't defend ourselves from those things. And don't defend ourselves from the words of Christ and not see them or not let them have an effect on us. Be corrected by them, and be corrected even by our enemies. And the more we do this, the more we will come to know the way of the Father.